This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Let's begin with the Republican tax bill and what it might mean for people in a state like Massachusetts. Unless you dwell off the grid somewhere or perhaps in a cave, you know that Republicans in Washington are poised to pass a major rewrite of the tax code, handing President Trump his first major legislative victory. A final vote is expected this week in time for the president to sign it into law by Christmas. Here's President Trump this weekend as he boarded a helicopter to Camp David.
The economy now has hit 3%. Nobody thought it would be anywhere close. I think we could go to 4, 5, and maybe even 6% ultimately. Each percentage point is $2.5 trillion. We are back. We're really going to start to rock.
All right, rock and roll. The bill would cut taxes on corporations and wealthy Americans and provide temporary benefits for low and middle income Americans while adding $1.5 trillion to the national debt. So let's get a couple of perspectives on what some say is the most dramatic rewrite of the federal tax code in a generation. Ira Stoll is a Boston-based editor of the Future Capitalism, of futurecapitalism.com. He's also author of the book JFK Conservative. Ira Stoll, welcome. Good to meet you. Glad to have you here.
Thank you.
Also joining us by phone is Noah Berger. He is president of the Massachusetts Budget Policy Center. Noah Berger, always good to have you.
Great to be here.
So, Ira, let me start with you. A big selling point of this plan is that it lowers the corporate tax rate from 39% to 21% in an effort to help make American businesses more competitive. We heard Donald Trump just a moment ago talking about it really kickstarting the economy in a big way. Was that a compelling argument to you, first of all?
I think so. I mean, politicians from both parties have been talking for years about the need to lower this corporate tax rate. President Obama even at one point proposed bringing it down to 28%. And we've seen American businesses even do these inversions where they declare that all of a sudden their headquarters are moving overseas to Ireland or Switzerland, which have much lower corporate tax rates. So the idea is to give those corporations some incentives to bring their money back into America and put it to work, hopefully employing American workers or even just paying out dividends to American shareholders who can then spend the money or invest it in other things.
So let me ask you, I mean, because we want to sort of get an idea of how it might affect individuals. So I'm just going to ask you directly. You're a commentator, an author. You describe yourself as a small businessman and you pay yourself through your business. So it's pass-through income. And we heard a lot about this. So tell us how pass-through income works and how this tax bill might affect someone in your situation.
Right. So instead of people, I've worked sometimes for big companies and gotten a W-2 weekly pay stub with all the deductions written out. But right now I have a small business after my newspaper that I worked for in New York closed. And I just write myself a check at the end of every month, and which are the profits of this little company. And I pay the IRS quarterly estimated taxes. And this tax bill includes a tax break for people like me. And I think the hope, the stated hope, is that's going to encourage people to start more small businesses and to take risks and go out on their own and start small businesses that eventually will become big businesses. It's limited to it phases out around $300,000 for a married couple, so that, say, lawyers at big partners at big law firms or accounting firms who make $1 million a year aren't going to get this tax break.
Right. But the first $400,000 for a married couple would get about a 20% deduction when it comes to pass-through, the tax on pass-through income. Noah Berger, let me shift over to you. Among other things, you track how budgeting priorities affect low-income folks in the state. What's your overall view of this tax bill?
I think probably the most important thing about this tax bill is that it costs somewhere between $1 trillion and $1.5 trillion, depending upon how you count. And that's $1.5 trillion that will likely have to be cut out of things that matter to people in Massachusetts. And one way to think about it is that if the government, the federal government, has $1.5 trillion to spend, it could have chosen to spend that money on things like education or transportation or expanding access to health care. Instead, it looks like we're doing the opposite. We have a tax package that overwhelmingly gives the major benefits to corporations and to very high-income folks. And eventually, that's going to need to be paid for, and it will probably be paid for. And the Congress is saying this already by trying again to cut Medicaid, by potentially cutting funding for education and SNAP, which are food stamps for folks who need it, and potentially, you know, cutting things like transportation infrastructure and research funding that are really important to the Massachusetts economy. So I think the most important question is, what does this mean in terms of our priorities? And in the long term, building a strong economy requires having well-educated workers. It requires having infrastructure that works. And if we're enacting tax policies that make that much, much more difficult, it could have serious negative long-term effects on the country.
So, Noah, I want to ask you about a couple of provisions in this tax bill, which arguably would help working people, or at least that's the way it's being sold. The standard deduction would double, up to $24,000 per couple. Also, the child tax credit would double, and it would have a larger refundable portion that would allow more lower-income families to benefit. So do you take heart that at least those provisions are there for working families?
I mean, I think when you think about what working families need, it's not. I mean, I think the average for the lowest income folks in the state would be about a $90 tax cut. It would be a little bit more than that for slightly higher income people. But still, the tax cuts at the low and middle end are smaller, both in terms of absolute dollars and in terms of percent of income, than the tax cuts at the very high end. But I think the more important question is that more important than having funding for things like education and access to health care and roads and bridges and things that people rely on? And to get a pretty modest tax cut for low-income and middle-income people while we're spending a whole lot on tax cuts for pretty high-income people and largely for corporations, that means that in the long term, there are going to be budget cuts that will affect the lives of people in Massachusetts,
right,
and will affect the strength of our economy.
I hear your concern. Ira Stoll, I mean, we heard, one of the selling points of this plan is that it's going to be so good for businesses and folks at the high end that it is essentially going to help the economy overall. I mean, respond to what you heard Noah Berger say there. I mean, do you think that if Trump is right, that this can really fire up the economy so that it grows at 4%, 5%, 6%, that it's going to be good for everyone in the long term?
Well, Trump has talked about the Kennedy tax cuts as an example, an inspiration for what he's doing. I wrote a book called JFK Conservative, which has a whole chapter on those tax cuts. And it's true, after those tax cuts, the economy grew at 4%, 5%, 6% a year. Now, you could say it was also a lot of defense spending and social spending during the Johnson administration. But
he was also cutting when top marginal rates were up around 90%, right?
That's right. But Reagan tried it again, cut taxes' individual rate down to 28%, which is significantly lower than the 37% in this plan. And again, Reagan unleashed economic growth.
Recently, the pattern has been very different. When both George W. Bush and Clinton raised taxes, that was before one of the strongest periods of growth we've had in a very long time. And then after the George W. Bush tax cuts, we had a very weak economy for a very long time. So the more recent history, and it may be because their overall tax rates are much lower than they used to be, is that following deep tax cuts, we've had weak growth. And following periods when taxes were part of a package to stabilize the budget and be able to make investments were raised, we had stronger growth. So I think that if we're going to look at history, there's more evidence that suggests that, you know, rational, you know, careful tax policy that makes sure that you're able to fund investments that are important for your economy leads in the long term to growth, and in many cases have led in the short term to growth.
Well, let me come back to you, Ira, and just ask you about the kinds of businesses that are concentrated here in Massachusetts. I mean, a lot of high-tech, innovation economy. I mean, do you feel, are you willing to make a case that this tax bill, this new tax law, would help industries that are specific to Massachusetts?
Well, I think that's one of the virtues of this tax bill, as opposed to some of the proposals we saw during the campaign from both Republicans and Democrats, is that it treats all industries the same rather than trying to pick winners and losers, whether it's alternative energy or manufacturing. You saw some some Republican candidates like Rick Santorum or even I think Joe Biden at one point was talking about a special lower tax rate for manufacturers. It's one of the nice things about this tax bill is at least at the corporate level, it pretty much treats you the same whether you're in a making robots or making clothing.
Hmm. No, I want to come back to you and ask you about what this tax bill will do to the Affordable Care Act. The Republican plan eliminates the mandate to have health insurance, and this is currently a key part of the Affordable Care Act. So how do you assess what the effect there would be?
Yeah, I think it's potentially very dangerous for the Affordable Care Act. The elimination of the mandate could cause problems as healthier people will be less likely to buy insurance, and that could destabilize insurance markets. It's also likely part of a two-step process, which first the Congress tried to repeal most of the funding or much of the funding for the Affordable Care Act to pay for tax cuts. They failed there, so they have now enacted tax cuts that ultimately will likely be paid for with deep cuts to Medicaid, which, again, would likely make it impossible to maintain nearly the levels of coverage that we have and could lead to healthcare costs getting much higher for a lot of people. I also just wanted to address for a second the corporate tax policy issues that were raised. And Mr. Stoll talked a little bit about the inversions, and that's one example of a type of tax avoidance that companies engage in a lot now. There's a lot of different ways that large multi-state and multinational companies can avoid paying anything close to the marginal tax rate by shifting money outside of jurisdictions. If there was a tax proposal to address that and use funding from reducing corporate tax avoidance to bring down the corporate tax rate, that could be a reasonable path for a type of corporate tax cut that would be rational and could be paid for, could be revenue neutral or potentially even revenue positive. Unfortunately, that's not, in the most part, what happened here. We have very large corporate tax cuts that are not offset by revenue at nearly the levels of the cost of those tax cuts, which means eventually they'll be paid for by cuts to programs that affect real people.
So, Iris, so we literally have 30 seconds left. I want to give the last word to you. This general theme that Noah brought up a couple of times, that is, these tax cuts aren't going to be offset by growth that they might provoke, if any. And so we're going to be left facing big cuts to big entitlement programs down the road, whether it's Medicare or Social Security or all of the above.
Well, I think there's a fundamental philosophical difference over who has the first claim on this money, right? The conservatives and Republicans think it's the people who earned it, and the liberals think it's the government. Now, we all have family budgets that are subject to getting cut when taxes get raised, or, you know, I have stuff I'd rather spend my money on than give it to Washington politicians and lobbyists to dole out to their friends.
Those corporations have a hard time making money if we didn't have well-educated workers paid for with tax dollars, if we didn't have roads and bridges to bring their products to markets paid for with tax dollars. Everybody in our economy benefits from and relies on those investments. It seems to me only fair that we all help pay for them.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Obviously, a conversation that will continue. That was Noah Berger, president of the Mass Budget and Policy Center. Thanks for being with us, Noah. I appreciate it.
Happy to.
And Ira Stoll, editor of thefutureofcapitalism.com. Ira, thanks for coming in. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. Coming up, a national IV fluid storage, fluid shortage has Massachusetts hospitals concerned. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.